Welcome, everybody, to The Rad Life, the only talk radio show that takes you along with host and age explorer Rod Gontos on his continuing journey of discovery into life's challenges, opportunities, options, and all the latest and greatest things that come with getting older. The Rad Life is brought to you this week by Your Home for a Lifetime, a company dedicated to empowering you to stay safely, independently, and comfortably in your own home. And now here is your host, Rad Gontos.
Hey, Paul. Paul, how are you? Are you still with us?
Wait a second. Okay, all right.
You know, what the heck, man? I thought I was coming in here for a radio show. I'm going to have to call an intervention for you.
You caught me.
I did.
I'm addicted to popcorn, and you caught me snorting a whole line of it here.
You know, next time, maybe, just a word for the wise, maybe don't make an issue about me showing up late with only a few minutes, because if that's when you're basically, you know, taking some Paul time, okay, you know.
Well, so, they had these cute girls from Skinny Pop Popcorn coming through the hall, passing out samples
this
here.
This gets worse.
A little shout out
minute.
To Skinny Pop Popcorn. So they said if we do silly pictures, we'll get a box, and I'll do anything for a box of popcorn.
That's your story?
That's my story.
That's your story. Sticking to it.
Yes,
okay.
Sure.
All right. So I'm gonna. If anybody, you know, in the wild chance that somebody's listening to us live, okay.
This is pretty good.
I'm going to basically. Wow. Did you just inhale that whole thing? The three bags worth of popcorn.
I sucked it all up,
buddy. You got a problem.
I do.
Okay.
Well,
we need to support group you. Okay. But okay. So
what happens when you get over 60?
I'm not going to tell anybody until the end of the show what it is that I found Paul doing when I walked in here with more minutes to spare than
usual.
Well,
you took a picture. I'm threatening to go public with it.
Listen. I'm going to leverage this thing on the rare occasion that somebody's actually listening live. In a few seconds, I will be posting a picture of a gotcha picture of Paul and what he was doing when I walked into the studio.
I'm so embarrassed.
And you know what? Skinny Pop, you gave him a shout out. I don't know. If this is the kind of behavior that Skinny Pop leads to,
wow.
I might actually have to start an advocacy group.
Yeah, right.
Okay.
Well, it's so addictive do have to be careful.
Now, the advocacy group might be supported by the lobby behind Kettle Corn, but that's a different story altogether. I got to get funding somehow, right?
All right.
I mean, no nonprofit just, you know, marches on its own stomach, right? We need something. So anyway, wow. I don't think I can unsee that, actually, Paul.
Go check it out. Skinny Pop Popcorn. I'm addicted to it.
Yeah. Thank you for owning up there and standing up, Brother Paul. Okay, so.
First step in any 12-step program is admitting you have a problem.
Yes,
a problem.
And slipping is okay, too, because that's part of recovery. So, you know, if you.
I'm going to slip right now.
You're grabbing for another bag, so just say no. Okay, so speaking of.
Addictive things. No,
addictive. Yes. You know what? Out. Yeah. No, there, it is. Speaking of addictive behavior and things that people do out of habit. And it seems, you know, not all habits are bad things. Mm-hmm. There are some good habits, too. Right.
Okay.
Like you brush your teeth every day. Right.
That's
I don't
true.
Really want to know.
That's
okay.
True.
Okay. I really don't want to know.
have you seen my teeth? Like
this show is just really going nowhere real fast. Right? But. We actually have another fellow addictive behavior person in the studio today.
He's here to come clean, huh?
Let's not push our luck, okay? But I have as my guest today a gentleman by the name, and known by many, famous and infamous and notorious probably, right?
Would you say his name.
Wouldn't you say that? Yeah. Okay. The man behind the curtain. Is
the one and only.
The one and only.
My best friend.
Well, he is actually a very good friend. And from the trenches. Spent time with him in the trenches,
oh, my
too,
goodness.
Right? Yeah.
Show's over by the time you introduce him.
Steve Carpenter.
Steve Carpenter's here.
Wow. Steve Carpenter. Okay.
Didn't he perform at the Carpenters? Or no, that was another one.
Oh, God.
Just knew him.
Just know.
That was a plug for my wife's benefit. Was that what it is? With Long Beach State, go 49ers.
Yeah.
Okay.
Go
the Carpenter
go
Center.
Carpenters.
Okay. But Steve Carpenter.
Did you really know the Carpenters?
Barely.
Did you? I never met them.
He actually knows a lot of carpenters, but we'll get to that later.
Well, he threw that out. I had to pick up on that.
So okay. So
actually met the carpenter.
Steve Carpenter is a gentleman that I met, what do you say, about a decade ago, Steve, almost?
Probably.
And, yeah.
About that long.
And we met.
He doesn't seem excited about that.
Oh, no. He's probably, you know, still going through therapy for that.
I'm still thinking about it.
We ran into each other at, I believe, if I'm not, correct me if I'm wrong, Steve, but at National Aging in Place Council.
Correct.
And it was a meeting at the Florence Sylvester Center in Laguna Niguel, or Laguna Woods now, or Laguna Hills, actually. It's Laguna
Hills,
right? It's
Laguna Hills,
yeah. And we had a lady here who's the current chair or president of the chapter, who's a reverse mortgage lady, and it's one of the episodes we've had that's up online now.
Yes.
On our Podbean site,
but I remember.
Yeah, so I met him at that chapter, and we got talking. And I believe, Steve, at the time you were executive director for Rebuilding Together, Orange County chapter.
At that time.
And so we got talking about, you know, aging in place and home modifications, because, and I'll let Steve fill in, but as many know, that the organization, you know, Rebuilding Together as a national organization, basically does home modifications for seniors, veterans, elderly people. So we got talking on a, like, shop, basically, with contracting and aging in people's homes and so forth. And then he asked me to consider being involved with that organization. So I've known him for about 10 years. And Steve is one of those people that whenever you turn around and look, he's still involved in servicing seniors or involved in that industry. And I'm going to step back and let him fill us in, because I'm sure his involvement goes even further than I've known. So, Steve, why don't you introduce yourself to everybody?
Well, I'm a master of none, but I try to do a lot of things. Try to serve the community still. Somehow I got some information and some skills that accumulated over the last 20-plus years in nonprofit.
He's being very humble.
Yeah, I'm supposed to be retired, but I'm actually having some fun serving my ego a little bit, as well as serving the community with things that are not otherwise readily available in terms of...
Paul, that's a good definition for you.
Serving.
No.
I'm eating popcorn. I zoned out for a moment.
come back down, Paul.
Part of the community.
Well, no, but I mean, we talk about this. We just to segue for a minute. We talk about this on the show. You know, you guys are legitimate boomers. I'm a boomer wannabe. So
yes.
You know, I'm just tagging along, right?
That's
but
right.
Trying to pick up some skills. Oh, please teach me Obi-Wan, right? but we talk about how that generation, you know, when you say I'm supposed to be retired, I think it's probably something that echoes with a lot of people.
Yes.
For a whole bunch of different reasons. But why?
We don't want to retire. Retire is death.
It's really boring. There's a guy in my neighborhood that every Saturday morning at 7 o'clock, he washes his car. Heaven forbid if my life was that organized.
Yeah,
seriously. Really. I mean, that's really boring. So, but the good thing about what I've been able to do over the last couple of years, since not being in the official workforce, is I've been able to do some things for people and in areas that were previously a skill level or potentially of interest to me. I can't say it's exactly a mission, because I don't want to be that hokey about it, but it's just, you know, you can help people if you've got some skills and some insight. And
do you think that's a difference in this gender? I'm going to be 60, I keep saying over and over again, just to remind myself, yikes, in a couple of months. And my wife just turned 65. We see more and more people who are either, well, one of two things. I don't think we're going to retire, partly because we don't want to, and partly because we probably can't afford to yet, especially
part of it too.
If we're going to live to be 90 or 100, you know, lucky us here. But the other thing is, as the people I do know who've retired, like you said, it gets boring real fast. And when did that happen? My father loved retiring when he was 65. My aunt, who is 91 now, retired at 65. She never did anything. It was just playtime for 30 years. You know, it's just have a good time, go to lunch, go shopping, whatever. Our generation doesn't seem to have that desire to stop working and do nothing.
I think it's partially because we haven't finished all the things that we kind of wanted to do.
Maybe.
You know, I personally didn't necessarily have a ton of goals. I applied to one school. I had to apply to a second school because that was the system. And I didn't look out that far ahead, and now all of a sudden I'm 60 plus.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm still making a plan. The biggest thing is getting up every morning and at least try to get something useful done before noon.
And I think that's another hallmark of our generation. We didn't have a plan. We were very reactive. We were living life in the moment here. You had that other couple in here, the artists – and they were talking about how one thing led to another thing led to another thing. That's how I got here, and that's so many of our generation did that, as opposed to the kids now that if you don't start practicing your tennis swing at six, you're never going to be a star.
You know? Well, I've shared this with you before. One of the things that stuck with me when I went to graduate school for master's, and it was the Peter Drucker Center in Claremont, is one of the things was what came across from one of the classes from Peter Drucker. And it's funny what sticks with you, because what stuck with me is this gentleman who is basically, you know, the iconic godfather of,
guru.
You know, guru of marketing, basically, for industry. And his, just again to reemphasize, my read on it is that his claim to fame really was because he was able to distill and synthesize the language needed to people to understand as they were climbing through the corporate ladder, that it wasn't a heavy academical background, right?
Right.
It was management, kind of like, it was probably... And I'm not belittling Drucker's philosophy or business or marketing prowess, but it was almost like a how-to marketing for dummies kind of before marketing for dummies was around. And if you had a Drucker book that was this thick, you know, like a Bible next to your nightstand or on your desk, very impressive, right?
I think he started turning it from an art into a science. You know, up until that point,
quantifying it, right?
Yeah, quantifying it and trying to figure out statistics
without it being so financial accounting base that the person who's growing, coming from the production line all the way up, is basically like, this is over my head, I'm not interested. To that point, one of the things that he said was that in the course of somebody's life, now he was talking about professional life or work life,
right,
a person on average changes careers 5 times.
Wow.
And he wasn't talking about companies. He was talking about shift, whether it's lateral or, you know, vertical, in the process, in the system. And so I look at you guys as far as the generation, you know, that followed this is what I want to do now. And, you know, Paul, in your case, you know, I'm going to run a radio station at college. I'm going to chase a band. I'm going to, you know.
All these things I did. Yeah, I have a very circuitous path to get where I got here. And along the way, I did half a dozen other things. We had a gentleman in here a little while ago. Stan Oftley, who used to be a reporter for the Register, and then he started working for the county, because he wrote about government, they started working for one of the county supervisors for a number of years. They appointed him to run the Orange County Transportation Authority when it was founded, and now he is known for this book he wrote on the history of Orange called Nothing Rhymes with Orange, and 30,000 copies get spread out to the school systems here of this book he wrote. And that's just a handful of things he did. And I think he's in his probably late 60s. And I'm looking in, you're alluding to the fact, your guest here, all the things you did. I've certainly done lots of that. Seems to be a hallmark of who we are.
You know, one of the things that I found out when I was going to school is I was not a particularly good student. My dad wanted me to go to school to be social. I won't tell you what school, but it was just recently rated very well by U.S. News Report. One of the things I found out that if I actually studied, I could get a good grade. And then
who knew? Who knew?
There was a correlation between those two. It skipped my generation, I think.
The point I was going to make here is that throughout my life, I have very few regrets. There's probably a couple that have to do with not having pursued a single something. At one point in time, I was on track to become a world-class surfer.
Really? Wow.
I worked in several industries where I could have very easily excelled. I don't know whether it's my generation or just I get bored. I wanted to try something else.
Wanderlust.
And, you know, life is...
Sniffing too much popcorn.
That's it. You hit the nail on the head. I'm not sure it was popcorn.
but you have the vainness enough to basically make it Skinny Pop.
Skinny Pop.
I think was that another product placement right there?
Yeah.
Skinny
yeah.
Pop.
Right.
When you need to snort popcorn, but you
box,
don't want the calories.
If we don't get the box after all this, then
I'll tell you what. This is great fun. I refer to a lot of things in my life as being cheap fun, and so far I actually have survived. I made it past 60, and that was
And
my
who
goal.
Knew we were going to do that? If somebody had told me...
Did he just call us cheap?
Well, look what I'm doing just for a box of popcorn here. Who knew, really? When I was a kid, 65 seemed like the end of the line. It was. People died at 65, 66. The theory was somebody on one of our shows a couple of months ago said the Social Security Agency picked 65 because they figured you
wouldn't have to pay out.
They wouldn't have to pay you out. People didn't. Very few people made it to 65.
Right.
So, oops. Yeah, oops, right. Yeah, exactly. And that's been a big part of the problem of the system.
What do you mean you want payments for the next 40 years?
Yeah, exactly. So all of a sudden, here we are knocking at this door. I've arrived what I thought was the end of the line, and now I see the line goes on a little longer here, maybe a lot longer.
Yeah.
Well, and they're saying, you know, 93, 94, 100 is not on. No.
I just visited a gentleman. House to do an assessment for his safety and stuff, and it was his son who was probably about our age. And,
his son is our age, yeah.
And right. He's like 93, and you know, and I think about that. I go, geez, how much money are we going to spend? How much do we need to do for this guy? He's 93. I mean, he could kick the bucket yesterday.
My aunt insisted that she go out and buy a new car 2 years ago, and she was 9. She had just turned 90, and I really. Looked at her and she said, "What? You don't think I should buy?" And she bought it on a 5-year payment plan. You know, I thought, okay, that's optimistic. You know,
Auto Club actually had. I don't know if I can make this advertisement.
No, it's okay. Go ahead. We're looking for sponsors, by the way.
Auto Club actually has a program that is occupational therapist kind of assisted, and it's called CarFit. And at Florence Sylvester, which you mentioned earlier, they schedule about once a month 8 to 10 people to come in, bring their cars. They're almost all new cars, some which are very expensive, surprisingly. And they teach the people how to make sure they know what
owned by the little old lady in Pasadena that never drives it on the
street. What do they do for it?
They teach you how to make sure that you know where your turn indicators are and your brakes and your steering wheel.
Because I had to do that, make the dealer do that with my aunt. She, you know, she was very uncomfortable where everything was. She'd had a car for a long time.
They would have never sold it to her. I know.
Yeah. So, I mean, again, so she's buying a new car in a 5-year plan at age 90. We're reinventing ourselves, and we're not just going to have 3 or 4 or 5 career job changes. We're going to have 3 or 4 or 5 careers.
Right.
Yes. And, you know, one of the things that I think is part of the spirit of our generation. One is we are reasonably conscientious, although people don't think that is the case. And
it's
we are
still there, isn't it? That social feeling, whether it's trying to go green or trying to feel good about stuff.
So I'm interested. Okay, to ask you guys this. Okay, it seems what I'm hearing. There's a sort of a benchmark by which all your lives that you have been told that is the measure. And yet what you have chosen by pursuing your own paths, accidentally, you know, coincidence, following the next thing, whatever it is.
Following your passion.
Following your passion.
Stumbling along, right, whatever.
That you basically, and what I'm hearing, and correct me if I'm wrong, is that though you may have no regrets to having basically lived your own journey, that there is still a sense that you may have underperformed based on what this benchmark is, this bar?
For me, absolutely.
And incomplete.
Absolutely.
It's kind of a mental version of hoarding.
So that's really interesting. And I don't know that we're going to cover it all today, but relevant to that because that's something
that's
not.
You won't have me back, I'm sure.
No. Well, no. Now that you've seen him snort skinny pop, I mean, you're in. You're pretty much like
you're part of the club now.
You're part. Well, I was going to say support group, but
no, we have a buyer's club.
Oh, buyer's club. bring. Yeah, you can buy Paul by bringing him a box of skinny pops.
Didn't you watch the Dallas Buyers Club?
Yeah, Buyers Club. So because that is something I share with you guys, too. And it's an interesting, I wonder where that comes from.
And I'll tell you, you know, I've never blurted it out so quickly as that. That took me, I guess it's only because my father passed away that I can say that. But
it's the skinny pop.
It was a sore point in our life the whole time. He thought, I was a good student. I did academically excel. And he thought that I should have gone into corporate America and spent the next 40 years like he did with one company and risen to be whatever, the president.
So that's a great point. My dad got me a scholarship to go to UCLA. He actually moved to the San Fernando Valley for that purpose.
Wow. Yeah.
My scholarship was in engineering from his company. I promptly blew the scholarship in the first year. I really wanted to be an artist or a draftsman or something. Of course, that's passé now. The long story short is, the long story short is I still have kind of that mechanical background and thinking that I grew up with, but I never became.
You have hit a couple of themes that I never really consciously identified until this moment. I thought I was the only one. That disappointed my dad because I didn't follow this corporate career and somehow achieve what he wanted me to achieve. Even though, by other measures, I've achieved a lot, but I didn't achieve what he wanted me to achieve.
Well, and so let me add one more layer to that because I know of which you speak, mm-hmm. right? And I'm a wannabe,
ah.
right? So even in
your
that
fellow sufferer, we're but, really letting
well,
all
yeah,
our
well,
problems
well, yeah, well,
on
no, but I mean, you know, we already talked about this two episodes ago or two shows ago, where basically this is Paul's
this
therapy
is my
session.
Therapy. Oh my God, you keep getting me to
you charge me for your therapy, but
I see some crayons over there.
We should draw.
By the way, this is a plug-in for Crayola, although they probably don't want me to say that. But in case you suffer from a blackout.
Yeah.
And you happen to have a box of Crayolas. Did you know that you could basically burn a Crayola like a candle for more hours than a candle?
No.
Yeah, so there you go. There's the MacGyver moment today.
Wow, that's right. A cool idea. Right. Because it's just wax, I guess.
Thank you to Useless Information and Trivia, yeah. courtesy of
so you have
too many hours
from
on
the
Facebook.
Same lack of living up
well,
to your
well,
dad's
well,
expectations.
Well, yes, but let me add this other layer because this could be also telling. I know, are the only an only child.
I'm an only child.
Right. Steve?
I have a sister.
Younger?
A little bit younger. She went to UCLA. She has unfortunately had MS since she was early diagnosed, early 40s.
No, sorry.
So that changed her life a lot.
Yeah.
She's a professor and things of that sort.
So let me ask you this, because I do want to go back to that, if you don't mind, and you're comfortable with. But given that you are an older son, or the oldest, mm-hmm. and that you are a male child...
Mm-hmm.
Do we all basically, can we all say that we have some sort of a, not necessarily a bad relationship, but a strained relationship in terms of communication, closeness, whatever, with our father or the primary male figure in the,
do we
share that? I mean, I can speak for me and you, Paul, just said it. Steve?
You know, my dad was faced with extreme conditions. Too bad you can't interview him because his life was incredible. I was just recanting or recirculating kind of that and sharing with somebody the other day. But I think he was always proud of me, maybe because he had to be. I don't know. But he lived to be about 90 years old, and he was glad to see me at his bedside when he passed on.
Boy, you just summarized my whole father's life right there. My father had an amazing story. Again, he was orphaned, a little boy, raised in the ghetto, rose up to be a vice president of company, rags to riches, you know, overcame a bomber pilot in World War II. I mean, lived that incredible generation, went through the Great Depression, died when he was in his early 90s. Very glad that I was at his bedside. And when he died, I don't want to get choked up here, but right before he died, I did something for him. And he got tears in his eyes. He says, "You're a good boy." And, oh, my God, I went out in the hallway and wept. I had waited my whole life for that old man to say, "I'm a good boy."
Yeah, I think dads,
oh
I mean, I have one son who's an orthopedic surgeon. and just in his third day of his first real job after a fellowship and everything else, I have another son who is a... I don't want to say wannabe, but he doesn't always have a job as a youth pastor, and he's working along doing a job to make sure that he and his wife survive. She's a teacher. The point I'm trying to make is that I'm proud of him. He comes and helps me with projects when I want to. He mm-hmm. calls me now that I've got a car with a Bluetooth on it. He calls me when he's driving home from work, figuring I'm in my car going someplace. And you know, that's what it's about. You know, he'll buy me lunch. I buy him lunch. I got him a propane tank the other day because he was doing a barbecue. And now he lives down in Oceanside, so it's hard to take the propane tank on the,
but
on
you,
the bus.
But did your dad and you have that same sort of buddy relationship? Because I didn't with my dad. I mean, my dad loved me, and I loved my dad, but we butted heads much of our
my
life.
Dad and
we
I used to
the world
go out
differently.
And my dad and I used to go out and hustle women together.
Well, I never had that privilege.
This is a first on LC Talk Radio's The Rad Life. Now it's really The Rad Life.
Really. But I think my father grew up, and he was of that generation. You didn't think about it. You just jumped in and did. And he made it out of the Depression. He made it out of World War II.
Right.
He made,
exactly.
Self-made man. And so then he felt, you have so much more given to you. You grew up in an affluent world. You had brains. You had opportunities. And why are you wandering from one to the next here? Just go, man.
Interesting aspect about the generation, I guess,
Brokaw
calls it the greatest generation.
Yeah.
Is when ATMs when ATMs came out, he was still trying to get, even when he nearly passed, near the time he passed away, he was still trying to get $10 out of the ATM. Mm-hmm. But at least he was figuring out to use it. He was incredible scientist, literally scientist, and some of the people he knew were the most famous people in science, and that was part of his generation and mm-hmm. timing. But yet, an ATM and $10 because he didn't want to spend 20 was just, you know, a very
phenomenal.
Very, yeah, well, it was actually what he was.
That generation was marked by all the early tragedies happening. They were certainly, my dad was always marked by, as so many have said, by the Great Depression. I mean, he would never, if he had a credit card, he'd pay it off in 2 seconds. He could never carry any kind of debt after that. He always had to save money. He grew up in an era where the idea the company was going to take care of you forever, although they didn't at the end, and that disappointed him. But it was a different world. And he wanted me to adopt those same things. And, of course, we rebelled in the 60s, so we're going to find our own path, man.
Of course, there's a story about the gentleman that worked for years and years in a construction company. And they had a big dinner for him, and they gave him a gold watch and stuff. But then the owner of the company asked him for one more thing. You've heard the story, I'm sure.
Mm-hmm.
Asked him for one more thing, and he says, I want you to build a house. And the gentleman who had worked 40 years or whatever for the company was actually kind of pissed off because he got his watch and a meal, but he didn't get a big something.
Mm-hmm.
And it turns out that the owner of the company asked him to build a house, which was designed for him because he had been such a good craftsman.
Mm-hmm.
And the problem was that he was pissed off, so he cut corners on the house that he was building for himself. And that's kind of a value ethics retirement conversation, which hopefully when people retire, they don't cut corners. And
so are we going to retire like this? Are we going to just stop? My dad saw it as black and white. You worked your ass off. I mean, he worked longer than anybody I ever saw. And when he stopped, he stopped. It was like overnight. And that was what killed so many of them because they couldn't adjust to that. My father did. He kept himself real busy doing things. But he wasn't ever going to go back and do another job.
The way I'm approaching it now at 60, almost 67, is, it's kind of on the wings of activity. There's stuff that's coming in my brain, coming in the top of the hopper, and I'm just going to ride it. I'm going to do as much as I can.
Come over
here.
We're going to pour some popcorn into the hopper.
Yeah, that's it. Working, doing stuff that's hopefully not a hobby, and unfortunately is not hanging out with my wife.
How about
as much
the guy? How about the artist that you had in here who worked and taught art at this high school?
Rick Delante and Tom Swim, yeah.
And
Rick Delante is the gentleman.
And then he retires from that, has some income, and now finally he's starting this career he always wanted to be as a professional fine artist.
Yeah,
there.
The gentleman who was with him, who was his contemporary, Tom Swim, the light or whatever internal motivator happened when he was in his 30s, and he basically literally walked away from Madison Avenue and being a graphic artist and went and said, I want to be a professional painter. I think it's very interesting because what I'm hearing is, you know, for me, and I don't necessarily have, you know, I'm not speaking for my generation, but for me, I've always thought, well, you know, this is, you know, the journey. I'm carrying my own, you know, cross to bear, and I'm, you know, pushing the rock up the hill, and I'm dealing with all this stuff. But what I'm hearing is that that may actually be something that is a legacy that your generation is passing on to mine, where you guys.
Sorry, we gave that.
Well,
to you.
No. I'm not, Paul, and I'll tell you why. Because you guys didn't. You call it rebelling, and you call it, you know, through music and pop culture and all this stuff.
We don't want you to be guilty now.
Yeah,
I'm not guilty.
I'm not. Actually, I feel liberated. And to be honest with you, for that you guys as representative of that generation, I will tell you right here because it just hit me. Thank you.
Wow. Nobody's ever said thank us.
Really,
for anything,
thank you. Thank you for rebelling enough to make it okay for someone to actually not rob themselves of the uniqueness of their own journey.
Yeah.
You know, speaking of that,
and making that okay.
Yeah, it wasn't okay for my dad's.
Well, it wasn't for me either. And yeah. You can say, you know, it may be ethnic, it may be, you know, where you are in the world, whatever. But the point is, I can only imagine, as difficult as it was for me to come to terms with my own self, that this is okay to do, to go pursue an interior design degree, you know, instead of civil engineering, which was my father's path. And it wasn't necessarily that I rebelled against civil engineering. It was just that's where I ended up, right?
Yeah, right.
And doing stuff that isn't necessarily that secure path of paint by numbers in order to have a secure life.
Boring. Obvious path laid out for you, and you chose
not
to take
it. Steve just said boring, right?
Well, that's what I thought.
Now, you said boring. Now, I believe that path is suggested to people because of one thing. It works.
Mm-hmm.
It may not be a fit for somebody. But in most cases, if you play by numbers, you will end up with a certain degree, varying or otherwise, of sort of predictable outcome. However, is that really you?
Or is it success?
Or is it... right? Well, how do you define success? I mean, it starts getting bigger, right?
I went to law school. I went to a prestigious law school after the University of Michigan. You know, had all the accolades, magna cum laude, et cetera, et cetera. And went to law school only because, three reasons. One, I didn't know what to do. Two, I didn't really want to go out and get a job. And three, it was my father's dream that I go to law school. So I did that and lasted for a year and hated it and made myself literally sick and just quit, much to everybody's shock and dismay. And that's when I started wandering after that.
You know, the wandering isn't so bad, though. I was just thinking about this the other day. Funny now that I get a chance to talk about it.
Yeah.
You thought you were going to be talking about today, is it?
Immediately after I got out of school, I actually kind of was dabbling in business because I was brokering some fellow fine arts students from UCLA, some of their work, and making a few bucks doing that. From there, a guy lived in my apartment building that was one of the founders of Laserium, and I got very involved with that. I was literally the fifth employee, which four of them were the owners. So I spent some time with Laserium, both in a administrative professional management role, a road manager, etc. Got a chance to dabble in some music with some pretty famous folks. Then at one point I went into business with one of those guys. Another aspect, back then we were selling IBM software. We created a product that was like Laserium for discotheques, because that was the timing. It was very cool. And then at one point in time, with my own business, I was using my master charge for payroll, and that was pretty tough.
That's when you got to look yourself in the mirror and say, "I'm using MasterCard to make payroll."
I went and got a real job, a couple of real jobs actually. Went into the automobile industry, which is, the path doesn't make sense, but now that I look back, it kind of does.
Wow.
And then one day, I got fed up with either the boredom or the lack of ethics or whatever, and I actually quit working. And I just said, okay, now what am I going to do?
Mm-hmm.
And then I went into nonprofit, which was, to be very honest, much more fulfilling. I felt that I could be the master of my own endeavors, and you know, that's how life goes. And I'm still kind of doing that now.
I think we're going to need to take a break. This is a really, really. I didn't think this is the direction we're going to take with
this
show, right?
But who cares?
We're wandering. But in fact, by doing it the way we are, we're proving what we're talking about.
Yeah.
That, you know, one thing is to never deny yourself the uniqueness, or rob yourself even more so, the uniqueness of your own journey, your own story. With that, we'll take a break and come back with Steve Carpenter.
If you are like the majority of Americans, you want to continue living in a familiar environment throughout your maturing years. In fact, according to many surveys, 82% of homeowners overwhelmingly prefer to age in place, which means living in their current homes safely, independently, and comfortably, regardless of age or ability level. With over 30 years of combined experience in residential, commercial, hospitality, and destination resorts fields, Your Home for a Lifetime is a company dedicated to empowering you to maintain your quality of life and independence by helping you make your house your home for a lifetime. Do you want to reorganize or remodel your home? Do you want to add a full bathroom and possibly a bedroom on the main floor? Are you looking to make your kitchen more functional? Is an aging parent moving in, or your child is moving out, or even moving back in? Call Your Home for a Lifetime at 949-492-1872 or check them out on the web at yourhomeforalifetime.com and find out how they can help you make your house your home for a lifetime.
Oh, wow, we're getting really heavy offline here. Back to the show. This was a very interesting theme here. I'll just share that one thought since you want to pursue it here.
No, please go ahead. I'm just still trying to come down. Okay,
you know,
Paul sniffs the skinny pop, and I'm the one who ends up with the high.
Wow. When I'll just end the topic this way, and you can pursue it a little bit because I know you want to talk about the nonprofit stuff here. My father died a couple years ago, as I say a million times on this show, and I've had four or five friends who I grew up with. From junior high, and they all come from different parts of the country to the funeral, and we're sitting around afterwards, and all of us, to a man, I said something like, boy, you know, it was hard. To the day he died, my dad loved me, but the day he died, I couldn't get that old man's approval, you know. And they all looked down at the ground. I'm like, you too? God, you're a corporate executive. You made a ton of money. You're blah, 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 blah. Oh, no, trying to get that old man's, that World War II generation's approval to say, attaboy. And a couple of them even went so far as to say, that's why my son, I don't care what he does, you know, he could be homeless and I'm going to go, that a boy, you know, I'm always with him, you know, not like my dad who's always finding fault and, you know, there's always one more thing to add to it.
And what I asked these gentlemen as we were, it always happens, right? We'll go off air and it's
really
like the conversation just keeps going. We need like a reel that's running, right?
Yeah, the after show.
The after show. I said, you know, is it really that our fathers are or were disappointed and never really kind of like felt that we achieved what they had in their mind.
Dreamed.
Okay. Or is it in our own heads? Okay. Because it's interesting. If you actually identify where that is sourcing from, the outcome is you have more power over handling your own head than actually having somebody else's opinion change. But yet we have spent year upon year upon year, every waking hour upon waking hour, having this thing that has come along with us like baggage that, you know, there's an old line from and I will spare you the first part of it, but from Eddie Murphy where he says, you know, something is like old luggage, it stays with you for life, right? This is one of those things that, you know, baggage, it stays with you for life.
There's a line by Neil Young that is also appropriate at some point where you figure out your own confidence and seek your own level, and it says, it doesn't mean that much to me to mean that much to you.
Yes.
And I think that is...
That's a big line.
That's from Harvest, by the way.
Oh, that's a big line. And that I think, is that epiphany comes to you, I don't know, in your 40s or 50s. And now I really live by that. I don't really care. It isn't that important to me if my neighbors are
impressed. Your generation had Neil Young. Mine had Eddie Murphy.
Right? Yeah. We had a little. I'll take Neil Young.
Well, Neil Young probably used a lot of popcorn also.
Yes. Oh, yes.
Yes, codename popcorn. Yeah, I think we pretty much just blew our chances of getting that box of popcorn, by the way. Yeah, they pretty much just say no.
Well, I'm surprised that you, because you've been very successful, Rod, and yet you're saying they're still, and your father's still alive. So I don't know if he listens to these things, but at some level. And
I'll never know. He hasn't told me.
Yeah, right, exactly.
Brad has more time to go still, though, before he retires.
Well, no, but I remember a few years ago where I basically went and spent a little time on myself and just kind of got you know, a few of these things kind of that had been, some of this old luggage that I've been carrying around with me, kind of reframed a little
bit. Open it up, look at it, see if it's worth carrying around.
Well, is there anything in there, or is it just my imagination that there's something in there, right?
Because
I haven't lifted it because I'm thinking it's too heavy, and yet it's sitting there empty.
But now they have suitcases with wheels on them,
you can roll your baggage in rather than carry it.
Well, you've hit a couple of common themes here today that I'm eager to jump and say this because this is my therapy show, but I don't usually discuss these with anybody because, one, I don't think anybody else shares them but me, and two, it's
still...
Or they
care.
I was actually kidding when I said it's your therapy show, but please proceed.
I think it is. And I want to talk about... No, when I was three, no.
Why didn't you sit back in the office chair and tell me about your mother?
Okay.
That's one of your other skill levels, right?
Yeah. Well, but I think, and I meant it wholeheartedly, I think you guys, and I, with the ability to see it from my perspective of, yes, not as seasoned as you guys, but at 50, I can look at that and see the connection that your generation actually, through pop culture, because it is so reflective through that, right? And that pop culture is an exportable entity. So even if I'm halfway across the planet, I'm going to get a sense of this media-driven pop culture, you know, export from the United States. You guys made it okay to, what is it, drop out?
Tune in, turn on, and drop out.
Yeah. You guys made it okay to do that. Now, you then became yuppies, and yeah, all of a sudden German cars became very popular.
But, you know, Swedish cars.
But and Swedish cars, right? So you not only became yuppies and became career-driven, but you also became safety and children safety-conscious-driven. Yeah. So all of this sense of, you know, and you in your own mind, I'm a rebel, right? Yeah, you're a rebel with a cause or without a clue, or I don't know what it is, but you're a rebel, and you still think of yourself in that manner. And I think that is reflecting in how you and your generation, you guys and your generation, are choosing to navigate through this part of your life.
Look how we're both dressed. We're both in shorts here. We're both dressed very casually.
Yeah, Steve's shirts are a little longer than yours.
Yeah, well, I know. I like the 60, 70 shirts.
I just didn't have time to change into my sandals and Hawaiian shirt.
Paul, I expect Paul with those shorts, and any day I walk in here with his hair being longer, wearing a headband and trying to be on Bjorn Borg or Jimmy Connor.
Absolutely. I was there. I did all that. It's interesting you say all these things. You're uncovering themes that sort of run through. I don't talk about them much, and so I don't see the connections, but so many of your guests have had sort of the same journey I had. And the other thing that struck me out of that was that, you know, we started this wandering, and look where it's taken us now here.
These are all older adult themes now.
Yeah.
Not the oldest adults, and not certainly you, Rad, in your age group.
But coming up.
These are very relevant older themes.
I tell people, though, you know, I might be by age and number younger than you guys, about a decade, but I will tell you something.
You're an old soul.
But I'll share something with you that's been a kind of a theory of mine for a long time. When you grow up overseas, okay?
You learn a lot more.
Well, not so much that, yes, I agree with you, because you're exposed to more and it by choice or other or by necessity. However, there is one thing that I constantly believe is the case, and it's due to syndication of television shows.
I see.
Okay?
It's the 10-year delay.
By the time the show shows up elsewhere, right? And that was back, you know, 70s and 80s, right?
Right.
So by the time I'm watching The Fonz and Happy Days, okay, and I'm thinking, what am I thinking, right?
This is what it looks like.
Happy Days is a reflection of Americana, right? Not the fact that it's a homage to 10 years prior for those who basically now own a TV versus wander in a bus.
You know, when you talk about TV, actually, we represent the group that went from black and white TV to... Even when my sister...
Wait, black and white, I've heard of this now.
Yeah.
I vividly remember when we got color.
When my sister and I used to say, color has priority. And that's what we watched. We didn't have to watch Lucy or Lone Ranger, which are black and white programs. Mm-hmm. It's still on the air, by the way.
You guys remember? And my father, was a fan of that. So, I mean, I grew up watching Lone Ranger, The Virginian, you know, all of this stuff that was, you know, there were Zane Grey books on our mantle. There's Louis L'Amour collection up in the cabin, you know. So that is it was a form of bonding with my dad. And I had no interest, but this is something you like. But that's something that I have now basically inherited.
Now, I will
an
tell
appreciation
you,
to
I
that.
Will tell you one thing. You talk about themes. That was a very common theme of my father's generation, maybe your father's generation. Your father's a little younger. He's in his 80s now or something. So he's about about 10 years behind us here.
Right.
And my dad never rode a horse in his life, I don't think.
But he watched Westerns.
Watched Westerns, loved it. My wife's father loved Gunsmoke and Have Gun Will Travel, addicted to him. And my father loved to collect the Russell Remington? Well, there's Russell.
No, there's Russell and there's Remington.
Yeah, right. And there were the painting stuff, and read all the Louis L'Amour books and the Zane Grey books from. So that was a very common theme that carried up to our early days. But after the 60s came in, that killed all the Westerns. The Westerns turned into cop shows.
There's a point now that this is a media event,
Yeah.
Including
this
popcorn.
This is happening.
There's a point in time where our lives incredibly changed, and that was November 22nd when Kennedy
John F. Kennedy was killed. I remember where I was
at. The data, the way materials were collected, the way people reported from the field, the whole perception, the Camelot conversation, all of the old school all of a sudden changed to new school in terms of media, color production, intensity of interviews, mm-hmm. all of that changed.
Feeling towards government and everything.
Yeah, and it could never happen here. That was a major pivotal day, not just because of the assassination, but because of all the social implications.
Well, and you had, I mean, say, had a similar thing happen that would probably be, that already is looked at, but, you know, like with 9/11, there are certain moments in time where we just celebrated the anniversary of that. So I think.
And for my father, it was the Depression. There was no overcoming the Great Depression.
Yeah. But I think. Big incidents.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, I think in the case, I will say this again about boomers, is true. That's very true. And I think that's not limited to the United States. I think every generation, every country has those pivotal moments, those those critical mass moments that happen. But I think the one thing that's interesting for me looking at boomers is that, and especially with given what we just said about a sense of disappointment, right? Mm-hmm. You guys are extremely resilient.
Mm-hmm.
You're very resilient, and it reflects in everything. In the minute you take your breath and wake up in the morning,
that's interesting.
We're still doing something.
You're still doing something.
It's interesting you say that because several other people have commented to me at different times. I'm like, boy, you're very resilient, or you come, and I'm like,
resilient's a good word.
I don't think of myself that. That isn't the word, an adjective.
I'm not talking survival. I'm not talking about I survive a catastrophe. I'm talking about resiliency. Mm-hmm. And with that comes malleability and adaptability. And I think that adaptable characteristic and the defiance that is basically underlying the character of that generation is something that's very interesting to watch unfold as people get into this
Do you
later
think it's,
years.
We're still trying to figure out what this new millennial generation, my child's generation. I don't know. I don't know that I see that same. In fact, there was a study that we quoted on another show here that said that the children of baby boomers, the so-called millennials now here, that they are not as
socially
adaptable.
Conscious.
Well, they're not socially conscious, but also not as adaptable because they haven't had the same level of problem.
To a certain extent, they've been shielded.
Yeah,
I mean, you know,
everybody gets a trophy, everybody wins. You know, everybody's good, and there's no winners and losers. And
and that, you know, you talk helicopter parents and all this stuff,
hovering over them, protecting them.
But I'll maybe part of that is what we were talking about before. You know, that sense of disappointment that you basically trying to kind of overcompensate for it with your parent, with your kids. But you said, you know, I don't know, you know, is it that, you know, we still are trying to do. I don't think your generation it's not about chasing that sense of unfulfillment. Mm-hmm. I think there's a part that's even deeper than that, which is basically you don't really want to be done with what you can do.
Oh, no. No, I certainly don't. And so I wonder, you know, as long as I'm able to, what will I be doing at 80 or 90?
But that excites you, doesn't it? Actually a certain
amount
of...
does me. I look at my aunt, for example, who's, you know, she's 91 now, and she's been retired for almost as long as she worked. She worked for 40 years, and she's been retired for almost 40 years. A couple of years, it'll be 40 years. Half and half. Half her life's worked, and half her life has been retired. And in that time that she retired, she will tell you flat out, if you're listening, I know what you're thinking, I would never go do anything else. The minute she waited and counted the moments, because it's just been playtime ever since. And I look at her and say, even if I had the ability to do that, and I probably don't, I won't.
You know, my wife's one of her very good teaching associates passed away a couple months ago unexpectedly, same age and stuff. And that also is an impact item on how you live your life when you're in sort of the older retirement age. you know, she's, I wouldn't say she's driving me crazy, but, and she's got a few more bucks than I do, which makes it a little tough, but we just drove down from Yosemite and she said, you know, I want a camping trailer. I'm tired of sitting in the water in a tent. So we drove, you know, an extra 2 hours out of the way, bought a camping trailer. And then I said, well, where are we going to park it? Well, we got to park it up the mountain. And well, then we got to build a garage for it, you know, and all these things just happened. She's turning 65 on Friday. Mm-hmm. So there's a similar, the female version of us in terms of not being an existentialist, but, you know, like, I don't know how much time I have.
Well, so I don't think
I got to keep jamming.
Yeah, I don't think these characters, and I don't, but like I said, I don't think it's a race against the clock. I think if you really want to label it that, fine.
But well, that's part of it.
But if you really got quiet with yourself, that doesn't wash. Race against the clock is what happens when you basically see the end line and you're worried that you're not going to make it. You guys have had that characteristic from day one, when the whole life was ahead of you.
Yeah, right.
I honestly believe it's not so much not having enough time to do stuff. It's the fact that there's a part of you that doesn't want to be ever run out of things to do.
Yeah.
And be excited about.
So many ideas. He was saying he's got ideas floating through his head, the hopper's open, everything. I just come up with ideas all the time. And my wife, we have different things of what an idea is, but she doesn't want to retire and just sit around and watch TV like her parents did. I don't want to just sit around and play golf like my parents did.
Golf is boring, actually.
Oh, my God. Isn't it?
So came up with an invention the other day.
Go ahead.
It's very simple. And
Patent pending.
The patents are not. I mean, this is this week. But the point is that when you think about the one thing I think that characterizes a good portion of boomers is we really are thinkers. We want to be thought of as thinkers, that we weren't just these crazies.
You weren't just doers.
Well, that we want to be doers, but we also think about stuff, maybe overly think, but the key thing is I don't want to be thought of as just running around in San Francisco.
And I got to react to that. Yeah. One thing, when I was in my in college and I had to pick a major, and I thought, well, I love history, so I'll be a history major. Like, well, what are you going to do with that? I don't know. I just love history, you know. And then I found political science, and I found that just – so I had to major in both. I couldn't give up one or the other. But my father said to me once just what you were – saying here. So repeat this with you. I'm losing my thought here again. You were just saying, oh, I had the great...
Another characteristic of boomers, ladies and gentlemen.
Oh, my God. I can't believe it just all floated away here. What were we just talking... You said it, and I couldn't... I had to react.
That's characteristic of us also.
Thank God we have iPod casts to where we can go back and listen.
I'm going to cut all this off.
You'll have to do a follow-up.
Yeah.
Well, I'm going to ask you this because I don't want to run out of time, but it just dawned on me something, right? We call the show The Rad Life.
Yeah.
Now, I think that technically, if you use the word rad as an adjective, that is different for every single person.
Radical.
How do you define? So I'm going to ask you both individually. We've never done this before.
We've
only
got 2 minutes left.
Right?
Radicule.
In one sentence, define your life from the prospect of how would you define it when you're trying to basically say, what is your radical life? What is the definition of your radical life, Paul? I know it's hard.
Why do I have to go first?
1 minute is gone.
Okay. Yeah, go ahead, Steve. Whoever goes first, Steve.
My definition of what I want to do in life is that I never have to turn down an opportunity, turn down an event, turn down something because I can't wrap my hands around it. I can't think about it.
What is limiting wrapping your hands around something?
I don't want anything to limit me. And age, unfortunately, does a little bit. But I want to do whatever I want to do whenever I want to do it.
That's really funny because I say exactly the same thing. And my mom has always said, you know, Rod's going to do what Rod wants to do when Rod wants to do it. And I said, I don't understand why that's a problem. Thank you, Steve, for confirming that. And that's 10 years senior.
I got a couple of them that flip through my head. The one I always usually turn to because I'm Irish and I love the wit and witticism of Oscar Wilde. But he said, work is for those who can't find something better to do. Wow. Well, work is just for those.
Or if you do something that you love, you'll never work a day in your life, kind of thing. Okay, all right. Well, that's fair enough.
Irish have to do it backhanded way, so we have to do it.
Well, that's your
offline. Your
Catholic guilt component. No, there's no offline here. Okay,
wow. I'll tell you why God invented whiskey.
Yeah,
to keep the Irish from inheriting the earth.
Yeah, I heard that too. Yeah.
Oh, so now we need a single malt or an Irish whiskey. Jameson would be a good sponsor for this show. I'm okay with that. Everybody agree?
I don't know if any of you watched the very touching interview. We're doing this in the middle of September in 2015. There was, for those listening as a podcast, it was a very touching interview with Joe Biden, good Irishman that he is, on the new Tonight Show with Stephen Colbert. Yep. There's another Irish. I didn't realize he's Irish. And they both got into this, oh, my God, the things our Irish parents told us. And Colbert said, well, my mother always used to say, what's the use of being Irish if you don't realize that life's going to break your heart? You know, because they had both gone through tragedies. And just like, wow, you know. So the Irish are with that. It is interesting how that, whoever we are, comes into us, and that's carried with us our whole life here.
Well, too bad this program's not several hours long.
We could sit here and process.
Got
the Irish whiskey here.
Well, here's the thing. Okay, to that point, thank you for the segue, you know, the soft lob there, Steve. But
you've got the Irish whiskey.
Okay. All right. And yes, he does, actually. So once he's done snorting the skinny pop,
he'll crack
open the whiskey.
Yeah, but Jameson.
We are going to run out of time, and I just wanted, I know that we didn't even scratch the surface, but I want to give Steve an opportunity. Other than for the gift of gab, Steve, which we obviously is not lacking in this room today, right?
Yeah, three full people.
Yeah. How can people? Because you are currently working at Adapt2It, right?
That's correct. Okay. A combination of doing business development and finding solutions for people that call us or come into the store and just say, "Hey, I need this for my mom. I need this for my dad. What do you think?" We'll go do an assessment. We try to figure out what's financially reasonable, maybe even a bias of being progressive in case the person does not want to be overly enabled, still wants to be independent, and maybe we'll progress positively in their ailment so that we can help them.
I'm going to have you come back, and we'll talk about certified aging in place and aging in place, because that's, you and I have that in common. But, you know, Adapt2It is still in Laguna Hills, I think, right? Or Laguna Niguel?
It's actually Laguna Woods.
Laguna Woods. It's off El Toro?
El Toro and Paseo de Valencia.
So go ahead and give the website and a telephone number, how people can get a hold of you, please, Steve.
Phone number is 949-457-1600. I won't give you my cell phone number.
What's the website?
The website is help@help.com.
Help@help.com?
Yeah.
Okay. And I really want to thank you for being here. This conversation, which I love the show for, just went in a direction that I had no clue
we were
going in.
Who would have ever thought?
Talk about a journey, not rubbing yourselves of your own uniqueness of your own journey. Yeah. We had a unique journey today, and I'm sorry if anybody didn't listen to this live, because it is an awesome show. Can't wait to share with everybody. We will have.
I have to listen because I have to see what I forgot. I had the reaction, and then I forgot all about it.
Is that the Irish guilt again? I mean, you're just going to go there and hurt yourself again?
I have to.
All right, so we're going. We will definitely, for sure, I'm putting it out there right now, Steve, we will have you back. I'm foreseeing not even just one more time, but definitely a number of times. And we've got plenty to talk about. I love the fact that you guys shared so openly and had sort of a bromance going on here in this room, right?
He's only 2 feet away.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I'll leave the room. You guys can have it to yourself. But I think when I say,
separated by
when
popcorn.
I say thank you, I want to tell people how to get hold of us. You can always email me at Rod, R-A-A-D, dot Gantus, G-H-A-N-T-O-U-S, at gmail.com with any ideas, thoughts, feedbacks on the show, interest of being on the show. If you want to be sponsoring the show, we are having that come up soon here, and we'll be putting out a package. You can call me on my cell. I will give that out, 949-212-8299. And I hope you guys join us again next Wednesday, same time, 12 o'clock to 1, on the OC Talk Radio Network at OCTalkRadio.net.
Yes.
And look for us on Facebook and Instagram. And thank you very much, Steve. We'll see you again soon.
Thanks. My pleasure.
You have been listening to the Rad Life Radio Show with your host and age explorer, Rad Gontos, brought to you on the one and only OCTalkRadio.net. Join us again next week as we continue our journey of discovery into life's challenges, opportunities, options, and all the latest and greatest things that come with getting older.